Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, and welcome to Big Gay Energy. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Theora.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters.
And we're here to talk about it.
Cheers, queers. We are back with another super fun interview. Today, we are talking to the wonderful Alana Wolpert. Alana was a writer and story editor on High School Musical, The Musical, The Series. She also wrote the new movie, Anyone But You, in theaters now. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Alana.
Oh my God, thanks for having me. So exciting.
We are so excited. High School Musical, The Musical, The Series is like Caitlin's number one show at the moment. So this is an honor to be able to talk to you.
Love that. I love that. It's like, it feels like it was my it was my first writer's room job ever. So it's very special to me. I love that you guys are watching it.
Okay. So I'm glad that you segued us into our first question really nicely.
Love it.
So how did you get started in writing in the entertainment industry? And how did you end up working on High School Musical, The Musical, The Series?
So basically, I moved out to LA after I graduated college. I graduated college in 2015. I'm old now, which is scary, but graduated college and then moved out to LA and worked a bunch of assistant jobs. And the last assistant job I had was I worked for Rachel Bloom on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which was just the greatest thing ever. It was the best job ever. And that was sort of the job where I was like, okay, I think I had been trying to write things and I was sort of like, okay, I think I know the things I want to write. I think I know what my voice is. I think I feel surrounded by people who, if I showed them my writing, they would be encouraging and helpful and not negative and, tell me that I couldn't do it, which I had experienced in the past. So I was just like, okay, I feel like this is such a good environment and I'm going to figure out the things that I want to say. And it was just like the best sort of incubator for learning and for talent. And I worked on the show for Rachel for about a year and a half. And during that time, sort of towards the end of the show filming, I had written basically a spec, but it was like a original pilot that I had written that I was gonna, use as my sample to try to get people to know me, get people to hire me, get people to meet with me, etc. And I had a friend who was on her way up to being an agent, and she read it and ended up sending it to someone, which spiraled just like a whole slew of meetings for me, which was really exciting because, I was 25 and now I was getting meetings as a writer. No one had taken me seriously as a writer at this point. It was very, very cool and exciting. And then ended up selling that script as a pilot to the CW in 2019. And almost right after that, that pilot helps me get staffed on High School Musical. It was sent to Disney. And when the show got picked up for season two, it had gone to Tim, our showrunner, and to Disney, and they read it and brought me in for a meeting. And then I got hired, which is just incredible and so exciting. And as soon as I went into the meeting and I left, I was like, oh, this feels like, I really feel like this is going to happen. And if it doesn't, I'm going to be pissed. But I have that feeling that it's going to happen. But yeah.
That's amazing. And then they are so lucky to have you on their writing staff.
Thanks. I miss it. I mean, we're done. We've been done for a year now. And, you know, season four came out in August over the summer, but the actors were on strike, the writers were on strike. It was such a weird time. We didn't get to have, you know, a little premiere party, and we knew it was the end of the series, so we didn't really get to celebrate. It was just such a weird time for it to come out, but so proud of the series generally, and just, you know, happy that we got to sort of end on their own terms, which was really special.
You mentioned the pilot that you sold to CW. Is there anything going on with that?
No, it's dead.
Aw, I was wondering because I was trying to look it up.
Yeah, and so there's an article about it when I sold it. About a year after I sold it, actually, they like released an article being like, this was sold. And I was like, uh-huh, it was. And I've sold a few pilots now along the way in my career, and all of them are dead. And, you know, what's dead will never die. Like, I still have people, you know, years later who are like, whatever happened with that one pilot? Like, can I see it? Maybe we want to buy it and see if we can develop it. And then I send it, and then they're like, oh yeah, just kidding. We don't want to do it anyway. Yeah. So it's like, it's truly like, all, you always get your hopes up and then they're dashed. But with this one at the CW, it was really lovely because I got to develop it with Rachel and with another producer. But working with Rachel in that capacity was so fun and special. And she's, you know, we still work together. She's one of my closest friends and we still love collaborating. And so it was nice to sort of have that transition of like, you know, I was working for you and I technically was still working for her for like a little bit of the process. But now I'm also like a writer and, you know, a person in my own right that's not just assisting you, which is cool.
That's awesome. It's a rough industry.
Yeah, it really is. But I'm lucky. I've had some good wins, so I can't complain, but it's always hard.
I noticed that you have a couple of different credits, including story editor and executive story editor for High School Musical, the musical, the series.
Uh-huh.
Can you just talk a little bit about like what these different titles mean and like yeah. your role?
Yeah, it's so funny because I feel like this is the one thing that when I explain to people outside of the industry, it like doesn't make any sense. They're like, why do you have these titles? You just do the same thing. And the answer is yes, basically. So when you first are hired in a writer's room as a writer, you're hired as a staff writer. That's like the lowest level writer you can be. And if you continue to move up the ranks, if you continue to do well, like sometimes they have you repeat staff writer if there's weird budget stuff or there's weird other stuff. I don't know. But usually you move up the ranks every year if you're on the same show. And hopefully when you go to different shows, you start on another show, they promote you accordingly. But basically you start at staff writer and then you get promoted to story editor and then you get promoted to executive story editor and then you are co-producer and then you're producer. And that's once you get to producer, that's when things kind of change because you have a producer credit. And so you can take on more work. You can take on more work on set. You're sort of a little bit more, not like more essential, but like can take on some bigger, more responsibilities, I suppose, than when you're lower level and when you're lower ranks, just because you have more experience, presumably. But none of those titles really mean anything. They're all like, you're a writer in the room. Like, I did the same things when I was a staff writer to when I was an executive story editor. Like, I was a writer in the room. It just changed. It changed my pay a little bit. And it changed, I suppose, like, my ranking. Like, it's very hard to get hired as a staff writer these days because there's so many writers trying to break in, which is such a huge problem in the industry. But now I'm at producer level and being an upper level writer, so to speak, it's much easier to get hired for jobs because people are always looking for upper level writers, especially upper level female writers, female identifying writers, because it is so hard to rise up the ranks. And once you get to that level, it's like, oh, people really need someone with experience that, you know, has a specific identity sometimes, and it's easier. So now I'm a producer, but I did start at staff. That makes sense. Yeah.
Look at you growing.
I'm trying.
I know. Quite a journey in a short period of time.
It is. Well, now I'm on a new show, which is exciting, and I can't talk about it yet because it's not announced, but it's a new show, also teens, also lots of music. So I'm really excited about it. I feel like I've sort of It's like a little bit like graduation because it's not Disney anymore, but it's still sort of the things that I love, which are young people singing and being emotional about music. Which
is it queer at all?
What?
Is it queer at all?
A little bit.
A little
bit. Not as much as I would like. I'm definitely in the gay agenda a little bit.
Thank you.
What if these people were gay? And it's like, well, I don't know that they're going to be. And I'm like, but just like, let's just go down. Like, what if they were? Which is so funny because the first season I was on High School Musical, one of my best friends, Natalia, was that person. And they were always like, well, what if this person was gay? What if this person was gay? And I was just like, Natalia, you can't make everyone gay. And then like I came out after that season and I was like, oh shit, like I'm pretty gay. And they were like, I knew it. And it works. When you tell people they're gay, they have to listen. So
I was pretty convinced by the end of that show that every character was a little queer. So
yeah.
Good job.
But also because of it all gets influenced by the actors too. And it's like, you it all starts bleeding in together, you know, like my own life was bleeding into the show, everyone was sort of bleeding into the show, so it was just like, yeah, we're all gay, everyone's gonna be gay, it's gonna be great, I love it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And speaking of High School Musical, the musical, the series, what was your writing process for that show? Like, did the writers kind of get a say in each episode, or was there like kind of like a lead that like took charge? Like, how did that kind of work?
So Tim, our showrunner, so I came on season two, and when I came on season two, it was the end of 2019, a blessed time when we did not know what horrors we had ahead of us. So it was my first writer's room. I was going into the office every day. It was so exciting. And we would sit in a room and we would talk, like we sort of had every episode on the board and all the characters' pictures up above the board. And we would sort of plot out the season. And in season two, we had 12 episodes. So we had a lot more than usual. In three and four, we had eight each. So it was a much shorter season. And we actually did seasons three and four on Zoom, which, you know, did make it a little bit easier. We had a slightly smaller writer's room and we did everything on like a online program where we plotted things out. So it was a bit easier. And in terms of, I think if we had done 12 episodes on Zoom, it would have been a little bit harder just generally, but yeah. We did 12 episodes season two. And Tim would sort of lead the discussion and we would spend time sometimes talking about like characters and, you know, getting to know the characters and breaking out their stories. Sometimes it would be a specific episode. Sometimes we'd be talking about the musical and what everyone's parts were, how all of that was, what was that going to mean for them? Some days we would talk about music specifically and like what songs from the shows that we wanted, what songs from either OG High School Musical, what songs from, you know, Camp Rock in season three or what original songs, anything. And, in season two in my episode specifically, the first one I ever wrote for TV, it was like, okay, we know Olivia's going to write a song here and she's going to sing something here. So let's just write like a bunch of buzzwords. And let's write up a document so that she knows sort of what to write for this placeholder that we have. And let's like work on that today. So every day was different. It was so much fun. But Tim, you know, our showrunner was really the one who led every day, who decided what we were doing. And occasionally we would break out into different rooms and other writers would have, you know, take charge over breaking an episode or breaking a character's story. But yeah, every day was different.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It does.
Were there particular moments or scenes that presented, like, were challenging to write? And any that gave you, like, an opportunity to play around?
Oh, wow. I'm trying to think. I mean, I suppose, like, I know, you know, we break out the episodes. And before I go off the script for any episode that I'm writing, as a group, we have decided what the stories are going to be. We've worked on the outline. We know every beat. Like, I'm not going off and just like coming up with ideas blind. It's all very planned. And if I turned in something that no one, you know, if we had a whole outline about like auditions and I turned in all like an episode that was about like a spaceship, everyone would be like, what are you doing? Like, this really makes sense. And now it's more work for us. But I would say, you know, by season three, we'd already done two kind of auditions episodes. And we were at summer camp now, and I was tasked with writing the audition episode in season 3, and I was sort of like, I don't know how to do this in a different way that feels different than everything we've done, because sorry again about the dog. She always like finds a squeaky toy whenever I'm on Zoom.
Of course.
Really good. But yeah, so I think that was a little bit difficult because we had talked about sort of what that process could look like. We wanted to make sure that it didn't feel tired or that like enough people had stories and enough to do. And I'm really proud of that episode. I think it went like pretty well. And it was so fun to do it in a summer camp setting where there was like all this new stuff. And there's a very meta joke at the beginning of my episode in season 3 about the documentary that they're doing, about calling it like it's something like Frozen the Musical, the documentary, or something very meta that we were sure that Disney would tell us to take out because it was too referential. And they were like, we think this is so funny, you can keep it in. And I was like, that's a win for me.
It's because you said Disney Pluses.
Yeah.
Frozen, the musical, the documentary. Why I remember all these lines, I don't know.
So true. They were like, okay, if you're plugging us, then that's good. But yeah, it was just, it was funny. There was a lot of stuff that I slipped into that episode too, that I so thought would get flagged or thought like, but they let us be a lot more daring when we were like in season 3 and, you know, whatever. There's a lot more not like, I guess, suggestive jokes maybe. And season 3 just gets so gay. And so I'm really proud of a lot of that work. So yeah.
Always fan of more gay.
Yeah,
I agree. We had a whole discussion about, we've discussed all the seasons, and I feel like season 3, it really became its own thing. So yeah. It's nice to hear you say that. It's kind of confirmation that like you guys had more freedom in season 3 to kind of.
I think so. Whether we knew it or not, I think we're just trying things and seeing if they were going to go through, because even on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, like we would have standards and practices flag things all the time for us. Certain things you can't say and, you know, all that. So, it was fun. Season 3 was a lot of fun. And going to camp and filming in LA was so much fun, too. So that was really special.
Caitlin, I'm going to jump a question because the segue is really good. Did your experience at camp influence the way you wrote your episode in season 3? Since we're on season 3 in the camp, I'm just curious.
My experience at my own summer camp?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, I had a very specific camp nickname, and we brought that into the show. And you know, what else happened at camp? Just like specific traditions, the camp outs, all this like specific stories, the way that people get close or interact. I also have like a very tragic camp musical story where I was in Oliver. I mean, this doesn't happen in the show, but I feel like this experience just informed everything. But I was, we did Oliver at my all-girls summer camp when I was 13. And I was cast as the rose seller, which is like the person who opens Who Will Buy. They go like, if you know Oliver, it's like, who will buy my sweet red roses? Like they start the song. I was very excited. And then halfway through the summer, the theater director decided that I couldn't do it. And so he demoted me and he switched my part with my friends. And so I had to be the knife seller or the knife grinder. I'm sorry. So instead of singing like, who will buy my sweet red roses and opening the song, I had to just go every like 4 lines. I just had to say like knives to grind, like that tone. And I was so devastated. And I had like already written my friends and family about how I got this like great part. And it was like a turning point in my acting career. And then I had to be a knife grinder. I was so upset.
I think you posted that on Instagram.
I did. Yeah. So Rachel Bloom did a show back in 2019 called Theater Kid Redemption Night. And it was basically like people came up and told their like sad theater kid stories or triumphant theater kid stories and, you know, got some sort of redemption on stage. And I'm not a performer and I don't really do that. But I was like, I will go up and I will tell my rose seller story and I will get redemption. I will sing the knife grinder part like the way that I wish I had sang it when I was 13. And so I did that and I had so much fun. And it's so funny because a friend of mine who ended up writing on High School Musical was at that show. And this was before I was hired on the show. And she saw that performance and she was like, that seems like someone I'll be friends with. And then we ended up in the room together. And now she's one of my closest friends. And she was like, I was right. Like, that's yeah.
That's cool. I feel like everyone has a sad theater story.
Of course. Yeah. And also like, yeah, I mean, I was never the lead or anything. Like I wasn't getting demoted in that way, but I just really felt like I was on the up and up and my dreams were dashed. Who, if I had saved the Rose Cellar, who, you know, my career could be so different. I could, you know, maybe I would be on Broadway. You never know.
Who knows? It's just that one little thing.
Yeah. Butterfly effect.
Yeah.
I already asked that one. Is there anything you really wanted to happen in the show, but it didn't make it in?
Well, I know Tim's talked about this too, but the end of season two was originally so different and we changed it all because of COVID, because it was just so, so tough to film. And I wasn't on set for any of this, but basically the end of season two was going to be a huge Menke Award episode. Kind of like the Jimmy Awards. It was going to be this, you know, they were all at this big convention center with this huge stage and everyone was going to be running around and there was going to be all this stuff, like someone was going to get locked in a closet and not be able to perform. And there were all these stories and stuff that we had. And then basically.
Who's stuck in a closet? Who needs to come out?
I think Nene was going to get stuck in a closet. Like, I totally forget why. Like, it was just, she was just going to get like stuck and couldn't perform. But basically, and then like Ashlyn was going to win a Menke for being Belle and it was going to be this whole triumph. But basically, I know. And the whole episode was written and everything too. And basically, like, I mean, the end of season two was really tough. Like, I know, like, Josh has talked about this. Like, he got really sick. Like, people were getting COVID. They kept having to shut down. And Tim basically made the executive decision of, like, this is how I wanted to end the season, but I need to get everyone out of here. So we're just gonna do whatever we can do. That's the easiest thing to shoot right now. And I so understand and respect that decision because he did what was best for everyone's mental health and everyone's physical health for that matter. And, you know, obviously like he misses that. We all miss that episode. Like maybe one day we'll like, you know, we'll shoot it and get back together. But at that time, it was so not feasible to shoot. It would have cost so much money. It would have been so many extras. Like we had all this stuff that, so in a perfect world, we would have seen that finale. And I was so excited about that, but it wasn't the time, unfortunately. So yeah.
Darn. Ashlyn really deserved that Menke.
Right.
But burning the results in a pizza oven worked too.
Yeah. And then that joke came back too. Like it's, you know, it still worked. It's still funny. And we all know that a little air came out of that season at the end and it makes us sad that we couldn't have done it the way we wanted. But, you know, who could have thought of a global pandemic?
Right. Unprecedented times. And you guys, you know, you made it work. So that is a feat in and of itself.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else, but I know that's the main one that we wished could have happened.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. Mm-hmm. So speaking of like writing for the show, were there any characters you like found that when you were writing for them, you connected very easily to them or characters that you found really challenging to kind of connect with when you were writing?
I really found, I love writing for EJ. I thought writing for EJ was so much fun. I feel like I wrote a lot of jokes for him in season three and I loved EJ. There, you know, we all had our own alliances to romances and stuff in the writer's room, which was fun. But I did love writing for him. And I loved writing for Ashlyn. That's the obvious answer. But that was the one that came the easiest to me. And I was usually tasked and also chose to work a lot on her stories. And even from the beginning was always the character I connected with the most. I think like, I watched, before my interview for the show, I watched two episodes. I watched the pilot and I watched Homecoming. And I don't even think they said Ashlyn's name in either of the episodes. And when they asked me, like, who my favorite character was, I was like, who's the girl playing Miss Jarvis? I don't know her name, but she's my favorite. I love her. And they were like, oh, Ashlyn. I was like, Yeah, I'm so sorry. Like, I did watch them twice. Like, I am not just being ignorant. Like, I'm pretty sure we haven't said her name yet just because I missed it in the, you know, other four episodes. So,
yeah. Yeah, we definitely needed more of her in season one, but we got there.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't there, so that's why.
Yeah. It's like Alana wasn't there, so we don't have enough Ashlyn.
Yeah.
I just have a big question.
Yeah.
Why was Big Red shipped off to Cairo?
It's so funny that he was. We really wanted to foster Ashlyn and Maddox's storyline. And that was something I took really seriously. And I really was like, you know, the biggest advocate for it, obviously. And we didn't want Big Red to leave, but it was kind of for story purposes, for character purposes, we sort of needed him to go somewhere. But it's so funny because the actor had that same question for me. Like, when he came into town, we were like all at dinner and he was like, so why am I in Egypt? And I was like, I can't tell you why it's Egypt, but I could tell you, like, from a character perspective, why you had to leave for a little bit.
It's just like the place is so random.
I think I like, for some, I think Tim found it so funny, and it is funny that it's Egypt for some reason, but I think I changed it once in a script and he just changed it right back. He was like, what do you know? I think I changed it to Italy because I was like, he works in a pizza restaurant, and I was like,
oh, he would love to be in Italy.
No, he has to go to Egypt.
Egypt. Okay,
so funny. That is not the big question I thought you were going to ask me, but it's so funny that it was.
What question did you think I was going to ask? Okay,
wait. I might have a big question. Let's see. You can be the judge. Okay, if there was a season 5, what would you want to happen?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I have thought about this. What would I want to happen? I mean, I would want everyone to have their, like, their senior year kind of vibe. I'm trying to think. I mean, there are so many musicals I wish we could do. That would be so much fun. But there were so many reasons, like, that we couldn't do musicals, or, you know, it was always going to have to be, like, we can't get licensing for, like, so many things, basically. Yeah. It's not Disney. So it's hard. It limits you. I guess in the next season, you know, I was always a really big Ricky and Mimi, like, defender. I really, really wanted them to have something to sort of, like, resolve, basically, to have a moment to resolve. And I did, the moment where, Mimi gives Ricky the lottery ticket is something that I wrote that I was, like, really, like, passionate by. I was like, they need some sort of ending. If she's leaving, like, if she's gone, we have to sort of know that she hasn't stopped caring about him, that their relationship still meant something to her. She knew about the list, you know, whatever. So that was important to me. So I would have wanted some of that. I would have wanted, like, a big fun show. I would have wanted, to switch up the leads a little bit. I would have wanted to see, you know, some more people, get the lead. Like, we all, you know, we have that joke of Ricky always getting the lead, and, like, I want to see him not get the lead. And I, yeah,
that was my version of season 5 as well.
Yeah. Get the male lead, and instead, like, I don't know, Jet gets it, or someone else, and I don't know. So more Jet and Maddox. Like, I really, really loved those characters. Those were really fun additions to season 3, and I was so happy to have them come back for season 4. I thought that was really important, and I love Miss Jen, and I was always pushing Miss Jen and Mazzara. I love that relationship, and you know, I know lots of fans love Gina and Ricky, but I would like to see them, like, I would like to see them go through it a little bit, and you know, figure out what, like, the future holds for them, but also, you know, we sort of presented another love interest for Gina in season 4. I would have loved to see maybe another love interest for Ricky in season 5, and how that, you know, affects them. And I'm trying to think. I sort of, like, turned my brain off after we finished. I was like, I don't want to, like, get upset that we can't do anything else. And, you know, but Yeah.
My version was that they did the prom and Miss Jen makes Maddox audition too. And so then it's Ashlyn and Maddox as the leads.
Oh, that'd be so good. They'd be so good in that song.
Ugh. Right.
The prom would be a really fun one. Especially like, I really, you know, I really wanted to do a senior prom and it's just like, we don't have time for it. Like we got to do our Halloween episode. We were so happy to do that.
Oh, that's such a great episode.
Yeah. But prom and doing the prom, I mean, good idea. Come back. We'll call
you. Yeah. Please. Okay. So this is not about the show.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do a lot of research for interviews.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So that's what I'm gonna preface this with.
Okay.
I saw an article that you wrote where you talk about being obsessed with Googling your name.
Yeah.
So given the amusing experiences you shared in the article and discovering your name twin, I'm mm-hmm. curious. Do you still find yourself Googling your name?
I do, but now it's like, it's for different reasons. It's because I'm trying to look up something about the movie and that I wrote. So it's like, I'm like, did anyone make me a Wikipedia page? And so I'll Google my name and see if anything happens. But also too,
I actually looked into it.
Thank you. I don't know how to do it, so I need someone to do it.
You're not allowed to write your own.
I don't,
someone else has to do it.
So. And I was like, I don't think I, you know, could get someone to do it. I've looked it up too, just because like press has been coming out about the movie that I wrote. And so I've been looking to see like if my name comes up and stuff. So I just will small search it sometimes, but I'm very pleased to note that enough stuff has happened to me that I've sort of pushed the other Alana Wolpert, who's now retired. So she's really losing. I pushed her down in the Google search, so I've been very, very proud of myself.
It's mostly you.
Yeah, thank you.
I wanted to just talk about that because, like, I used to do that when I was younger, too.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm the one who introduced my friends to them. I'm like, let's look up your name. And, like, my name was just, like, it never came up. Now there is stuff, but.
Yeah. Well, my friends all had really, like, had a lot more common names, so. Because we were, you know, Jewish girls growing up in South Florida, and we all, like, you know, my one of my best friends was Caroline Epstein, and there's, like, a million of them, you know? Like, she had no, and we hadn't done anything yet. So it was just, like, there was nothing there. But, yeah, that was a fun one to write. I wrote that for my very dear friend Amy Solomon edited and put together this book called Notes from the Bathroom Line, and I wrote that for the book. And then Hey Alma, like, excerpted it to sort of, preface the book coming out, which was really cool and nice. But also I did get like a hate tweet from someone who I guess knew the other woman. Mm. And was like, do you know how disrespectful this is? Like, do you understand like how hard this woman has worked and like how you like demean her to her looks? And I was like, no, it's like I'm making fun of myself that's what I was talking about. I would never like criticize someone for their look. Like I was just like, I'm not going to go into it with this woman, but it was very sad.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just like, once I read that, I was like, I relate to her. 'Cause I just, because you were talking about like figuring out who these people were and learning about them. And I love learning about people and seeing how much I can find on the internet. The internet can be a scary place.
I love to research. Love to deep dive.
All right, so we've had a secret guest on the podcast this whole time, and for those who are listening on the audio, you cannot see, but it's your dog, who's being very cute on the couch right now, and we are huge animal lovers, particularly dogs, so can you tell us a little bit about Ella, our secret guest?
This is Ella. She's so sweet. She's asleep right now. She is... I got her summer of 2020. I was still living with roommates. They were very kind to... except me deciding to become a dog owner into their midst. And we all sort of like very Full House vibes co-parented her together for a little. And until we all, you know, moved out last year. And she is a half boxer, half many different shepherd mix. She's very sweet. Her name is Ella Fitzgerald. That is the name that the rescue gave her. And I kept it because she's so sweet. I also have a portrait of her behind me. That I was just given by the friend's mom, which is very sweet. So, but she's just the best, and she's like
sure, my dog.
No,
yeah, you have it too.
It's so important to have art of your dogs. Like, it really is. So, but she's just the sweetest, and like, she's such a good litmus test of people. Like, she's very, she does not like strangers coming in, and she's very like, I was dating someone a while back, and she came into the house, and Ella just, and I mean, this was like a lovely person. Like, there is nothing wrong with this person. We are still in touch. She's perfectly lovely. Ella was like so protective, did not stop barking at her the entire time she was over. And then basically, like, we sat down on the couch, and Ella sat between us and just growled at this girl literally for like 30 minutes until she was like, I think I should just go. And I was like, I guess so. Like, this isn't going to work, apparently. And that was our last date.
Oh, no. So, I was like, this is not going to work out.
Ella knew something I didn't. And she was right. Unfortunately, like, it wasn't the person for me, but she was just like, yeah, she just knew.
No. Intuitive. I really want to hug Ella. Ella looks so cute.
Yeah, she's a really good girl. She's just asleep right now. She was barking at people going by earlier. And then she passed out.
What else is there to do? You have to bark at everybody that goes by.
That is her life. She loves it.
Okay, so I found something else on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I found something from 2008. And oh my God. Absolutely loved it. I try to find us.
What did you find from 2008?
So you were part of the first generation to start Project 1841 that helps raise funds and collects donations for starter kits for teens aging out of the foster system.
Yeah.
Project 1841 is now in its sixth generation. How does it feel to have been part of creating such a lasting impact in your childhood community?
It's amazing. I can't believe we're on six generations. That makes me feel so old. But it was like such a special thing to be part of. I mean, it was like, you know, for 4 years, like a huge, huge, huge part of my life. And I am just like really glad that it still continued. And I, you know, my mom is still a little bit involved in it because she still lives in the community and she's still in touch with people that we worked with it at ChildNet, which is the, you know, foster care system in Broward County. And my aunt and uncle are foster parents, and they're very involved with the foster community in South Florida. So I feel very good that, like, my family is still part of it, even when I can't be. But I'm so proud that that started. I'm very, like, touched that you found that. That was a really special, special thing, and also really dates me that I, you know, did something sort of impactful in 2008. I feel ancient.
You were in high school.
I was in high school. Yeah. It's really just because, like, my girlfriend was born in 2000. And so when you do the math, sometimes it's really hard for me to, like, we watched Twilight recently and she goes, oh, I was 8 when this came out. And I was like, oh, I went to see it and my friend drove me because we were in high school. I'm going to just, like, take a gun to my head at this point. Like, this is, I can't hear it.
I do that on the podcast all the time because the largest age gap is 14, and then Theor and I have a 9-year age gap. So especially with technology now, things are so different even from a few years. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's when you're
the little one, making people feel
old. Yeah. It really dates things when you think about it, but yeah.
All right. I promise this question will not age anyone in any way, shape, or form. This is, everyone will relate to this. Okay. So as a Swiftie myself, I found out that you are as well. So yes. Yeah. I want to know, do you have a favorite era in honor of the Eras Tour?
Wow. I mean, yes and no. I think it keeps changing, but I mean, I've just, you know, I went to the Speak Now tour. I've been there since the beginning, but I love Reputation, and the Reputation era at the tour is so good and so special that it really just renewed my love for Reputation. But I went through a really big, like, Reputation renewal phase in 2020, where all I did was listen to Reputation. Like, it was like Reputation, Folklore, Evermore, like, just truly on repeat. And that was my vibe. But yeah, I love Reputation, and I really love Folklore and Evermore. Like, those are just really special to me. And yeah, so I guess that's my answer.
That's a good answer. You'll go through another Reputation like love era. I'm sure when she re-releases.
Oh, of course,
it's coming.
Yeah, because like I every time she releases like a Taylor's version, I always am like, you know, get back into the album. It's fun to be able to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Theora's been working on turning me into a Swiftie.
Yeah.
Because like I knew some of the music, but not Theora level. Like we have a whole episode that's like not even the main episode that we're gonna be filming about queer themes in her music.
Ah.
But I got to see the movie with Theora and it was really cute.
That's fun.
Seeing Theora watch it.
That's so
fun. But it was also really good. Like that concert, I'm jealous you got to see it in person.
It was so cool. And it was really like one of those free things where like I got two tickets like at normal price. And I was nice. Like, how did I, and we were so close. I was like, how did I do that? Like, that was amazing. But it was so much fun. And like, you know, my girlfriend is not a Swiftie and she really studied up before the concert in a way that I appreciated. And I got her really into Taylor during Midnight when Midnights came out. So that was special.
That's when you know it's true love, when they work for something that you
yeah,
love.
She had like a playlist and she was listening, like she knew all the words like more than I did because she like literally studied. She took it so seriously. I was like, oh my god, thank you. Appreciate that.
I love that. Okay. You also have a new movie that you wrote that is currently in theaters called Anyone But You. Can you tell us a little bit about that project and how it came to be?
Oh my god, I still can't believe that we're at that point where it's like a movie in theaters. Well, so exciting. But basically, this one also originated a really long time ago. It was in 2019, I had a meeting with we were both assistants at the time, and it was like sort of a general meeting, and we were talking about rom-coms and really hit it off. We had like sort of a 3-hour meeting. And I was like, I've always seen, you know, I studied Shakespeare and stuff in college. I was very, very deep into theater in college and studying like different practices. And I was an English major. So a lot of my English major stuff was Shakespeare based. I took a lot of like, you know, Elizabethan era literary type classes. And I took a lot of British novel classes. And that was sort of my focus. And so I said to this person in the meeting, like, I've always seen Much Ado About Nothing as like the perfect modernized like rom-com, in the same way that She's the Man is a wonderful modernized movie based on Twelfth Night and 10 Things I Hate About You is Taming of the Shrew. I was like, no one's done Much Ado About Nothing. It's the best comedy and it's so much fun and it's so farcical and it's so like, you know, enemies to lovers, these two people who hate each other, they have the best banter. Like, it's always seemed to me like the perfect romantic comedy. And she was like, oh my god, I've always thought that too. That's my favorite play. You should write that and I'll like produce it. And at the time we were like, and we'll sell it to the company that she was currently working for. And she left that company. She went to a couple different companies. Meanwhile, I was still writing this and she would like read it and give me notes. And it was very much sort of like an insular process. I didn't even have like a future agent at this point. And then in 2021, I did have an agent and we decided to send it out to production companies. This is like the long version. We got a production company attached and they were really excited about it. And they were like, we think we could make this, like we could really do this. And at the beginning of 2022, we had sort of like loosely explored some actor options and none of them felt right or no one was responding. And it was like, at the beginning of 2022, we were like, okay, let's make a list of like people who we actually want to do this movie and not just people we're going to because we feel like we should, or like we feel like they might want to do a rom-com and because they've done some before. And we made a list of like people around the right age that we really wanted. And Sydney Sweeney was the top of the list. We were like, we want to see her do a rom-com. She seems great. Let's try to get it to her. And Sydney read the script in like 5 seconds after she got it. And she, to her assistant's credit, who like read it first and then passed it on and was like, this is good. Who's just the best. And then we met with her on Zoom and she was like, I'm going to do this. Like, I want to get this made. Let's go. Like, let's do it. And she was so excited about it and so enthusiastic and like had it not been for her like determination to get it done and always having a place in her schedule for it, even though she was like crazy busy, it wouldn't have gotten made. So like so grateful to her, and she produced it, and she's just like the fucking best. And then a little bit later, and they've talked about this, but Sydney and Glenn met at the MTV Movie Awards, and he presented her with an award, and she called us later and she was like, well, what about Glenn for the part, for the male lead, who, you know, we hadn't really found anyone who was right for it. She was like, well, what about him? And we were like, well, does he want to do a rom-com, like whatever? And she was like, it doesn't matter, like he should. He's done them before. He's amazing. She just seen Top Gun, and she was like, let me like, you know, let me get on Zoom, let me pitch it to him, send him the script, like all that. And then he was in. And then once he was in, things moved really fast because it was like, okay, we know what this is. Here's this cast of these two like incredible rising young star leads that are both insanely hot. And we got a director, we sold the movie. All of a sudden we were in pre-production, and beginning of 2023, it was flying out to Australia to be on set, which was so crazy. So that is the long version of how it got made, which is like, you know, just truly due to people really not giving up on it and keeping it, you know, top of their priority list. And so, yeah. And now end of 2023, it's coming out.
That's so awesome. Thank you for sharing the long version. Yeah. So to hear it all.
I know. It's a lot of like, you know, obviously there's a lot of nuance in all of the details, but ultimately like it really, when you have someone who has that kind of star power, and I mean, producers too, like my producers were so amazing, and they always, you know, were checking in and making sure they were going out to the right talent, and, you know, they were on it. And when you have people that like really care about something, and also like, I, you know, don't diminish the power of rom-coms. It's really special. And I'm like, so glad that I had a group of people who cared about it so much, and our cast too, you know, just, and the director, like everyone who was involved really took it seriously. And it's like a fun, silly movie, but that doesn't mean that those movies don't deserve to be in theaters. And we're having such like a crisis of rom-coms not coming out in theaters anymore. Yes. Unless they're big, like already pre-established movie stars. And I feel like Glenn and Sydney have proven themselves to be movie stars, even if they haven't had those like big studio opportunities. I mean, Glenn was in Top Gun Maverick, and Sydney's been in some wonderful movies, but like, yeah, it's hard out there. So I'm just so glad that it's made it to this point, because it's so hard to get a movie made, and I never foresaw it, you know. So,
and you also got to go to Australia for
it. I got to go to Australia. I was there for like a month almost. Wow. Yeah. Nice. They were there for like 4 months for a while. I only went for like a little bit, but yeah, it's really cool.
Well, we wish you all the success with this movie. We're excited to watch it. May this revive the rom-com genre, because we
I hope so. I really hope so.
All right, so that ends our question, like deep dive question kind of segment. Okay. And to kind of wrap things up, we're gonna jump into like a kind of a rapid fire quick couple of questions. We call this the would you rather section.
Ooh.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So first one. Ella wants to play. Ella's really excited about this.
She was ready.
She's ready.
Answering.
Okay. So would you prefer to create a storyline where the characters, this is High School Musical.
Yeah.
The characters time travel to the original High School Musical era, or one where they imagine themselves in a different fictional universe?
Oh my God. That's so hard, just because like, right, we always joke about our characters going to Euphoria, and like how fun that should be. Is like,
that would be wild.
Like Ashlyn gets wrapped up in like doing drugs with Zendaya. Like, oh God, it would be so fucking funny. But yeah, I think it's that. Yeah.
Let's go do that. That's amazing. Like
Euphoria.
Okay.
Sorry, that's so good. Oh my gosh. And make it comedy. It'd be,
yeah. It'd be so like, good. He sees Jacob Elordi and realizes like he's no longer the big man on campus, and they all audition for the musical, and Mod Apatow like just writes them all like terrible parts, and she gets like the best role. Like, I'm just like, there's so many ideas.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Okay, this next one is kind of our signature for the podcast. Would you rather have to get the sex talk from Miss Jen or Corbin Blue?
Miss Jen.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you prefer to create a subplot where the characters discover a magical karaoke machine that makes them sing like chipmunks, or one where they accidentally swap voices for a day?
Swap voices for a day.
Yeah. All right. Would you rather have an actor change a few of the lines you wrote and completely nail the scene, or say every word, everything word from word, but have a lackluster delivery?
The first one. I always would rather have someone change something and then it'd be great. Like, I so am not married to anything I write. Really.
I know some people are like, don't change my words.
No, I so prefer it. And we change stuff on set so frequently. Like, we'll watch rehearsal and then I'll be like, actually, can you say these two things instead of that one? Like, you were right. Like, forget it. So, yeah.
Would you rather win first place at a national spelling bee or win a national typing competition, renewing your title as keyboard wizard?
Oh my god. I feel like I am more likely to win the typing competition because I'm still a very fast typist. So I'll take that and I'll be a keyboard wizard.
So we'll get better at spelling one day.
Yeah.
Would you rather spend the entire day with Shrek or have Thanksgiving dinner with Tom Hanks?
Oh my god. Tom Hanks, of course. Shrek would just like make me go for a mud bath and I'm like, I don't want to get dirty.
Well, thank you. That concludes our Would You Rather section.
You guys really did do group search. That's very funny.
Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. We've come to the end of the podcast. Thank you for joining us. Before we officially sign off and say goodbye to everybody, do you have any final words for our listeners at home?
Keep watching queer stuff. The more you watch it, the more we get to make it. And the stupid algorithm, it's like, but the more streams we get, the more those companies are going to let us make stuff. So just keep watching things that have queer representation. We get to keep making them and cheer them on. That's all.
Yeah. Endorse that.
And if you keep wonderful watching sentiment. Musical, I get more money and my dog's food is really expensive. So you stream High School Musical.
Thank you so much, Alana, for talking with us today and your wise wisdom at the end. We really appreciate getting to know you better and getting insight into your role in all of your projects. To everyone listening at home, like Alana said, please stream all four seasons of High School Musical, the musical, the series. It's on Disney Plus. And check out Anyone But You in theaters now. And also don't forget to follow Alana on social media. And until next time, everyone, hydrate for lesbian Jesus.
And gay it up all over the place.
Bye.
Bye.
And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. If you like this episode, check out all our other episodes on whatever you're using to listen right now. If you're listening on Apple, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review, no matter how brief. It helps us get into Apple's algorithm to reach a wider audience.
Please feel free to reach out to us. We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all the social medias at Big Gay Energy Pod or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com. If you'd like to make friends with other queer media loving people, reach out to us to join our Discord server.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more. Until next time, stay safe and hydrate for lesbian Jesus.